Well, yeah, you're a lucky Hulk Hogan, aren't you? Hulk Hogan, you survived. You made it to Hall of Fame. You even almost for like 30 seconds sounded humble. But I'm not happy. I did not headline that show, Chris Wilder. I'm very upset about that. Because I should be the top of the mountain, the cream of the crop, the number one of all the Hall of Famers, the Macho Man Randy Savage. And you know what, this whole build up to WrestleMania, I'm kind of tired. I'm gonna go away for a while, Chris Wilder, but if you start acting up, I will return with much fury. So keep that in mind.
Well, that's kind of scary. Were you at least impressed with the speech that your brother gave?
No, I wasn't. Lanny talks like I liked him. I didn't. I never liked him. His poetry sucks.
Well, his rhyming was on point. You can give him that at least.
He doesn't rhyme like the rapper that I am. I had an album, you know, and I was pretty damn good on it.
Yes,
go check
were.
It out. Be the man, Hulk Hogan. Be the man.
Some extra savage today. I like it.
Yeah, but he's going away for a while. We're shelving Randy for a bit. But his use in the lead up to the Hall of Fame we had to have. So I am James Borbeth, the guy who does the Randy Savage impression. He is Chris Wilder, the Swiss millennial. Together we form this podcast that we do each and every week here on KondoOnTheMoon.com. You can follow us at KondoOnTheMoon on Twitter. And Chris Wilder, busy week. We had WrestleMania. We had the WrestleMania post-Raw that is always a zoo. There is lots to talk about. And even some ROH news to throw in there. And we'll get it in right now quickly. Those of you in Canada who have missed TNA, who probably clearly don't listen to this podcast, but TNA has found a broadcaster here in Canada. They are going to be on the Fight Network every Friday now.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Now I can still not watch TNA.
Yeah, you can
Canada.
Ignore them officially now.
Yeah, they have a network that I won't tune into, so perfect. I mean, now we're back to where we started anyways.
Oh, no, tune into the Fight Network. I love this stuff they do on the Fight Network, but I'm not watching TNA.
Well, I don't have the Fight Network anyway.
Well, I do have the Fight Network.
Big man.
Actually, big news on the Fight Network, other than TNA, which I am more excited about. Review of Raw is now going to be on the Fight Network every Tuesday, so I will be tuning in the morning to listen to John Pollock and Wei Ting and what they thought about Raw.
Very nice.
So there you go. Anyway, WrestleMania, it was a big deal. It always is a big deal. And I got to say, we said the build-up to this show sucked. The show itself didn't suck.
Yeah, I was blown away by WrestleMania. One of the better ones I've ever seen. I wouldn't put it in the top five, but I think it was very entertaining. I ordered it. I mentioned I got the WWE Network just for this event, and my goodness, that wasn't really a dull moment on the card.
Yeah, I think it's right on the edge of that top five, but people saying it's the best ever, go give your head a shake.
Chance.
I mean, for starters, when you look at this card, it was a very good card from top to bottom, I agree, but it really lacked that standout, you know, Savage Steamboat match that was on this card. It just didn't exist. I mean, there was lots of very good matches. I don't think we had a great match on this card.
Yeah, I agree. When I looked at the times of these matches, I don't remember one going over 17 or 18 minutes, I think, because there was a lot of matches booked on the card. They also had the stupid musical performance by Kid Ink and that girl, Skylar Grey, but yeah, I totally agree with you. But from an entertainment standpoint, I think it's just from top to bottom, everyone who competed on that card really delivered. But again, there wasn't like that one match that you absolutely have to go back and look at and say, hey, that was like an all-time classic.
Yeah, it just wasn't there. And that musical thing, that's become the bathroom break of WrestleMania. Let's face it.
Definitely.
I mean, if I cared about the artists, I'd feel sorry for them because literally 70,000 people don't want them there and don't care that they're there.
Yeah, but you need, like, again, you need that break during the show. Usually the Divas match would be the bathroom break, but even they had a good showing.
See, I disagree. You know what? The one match I was disappointed with on this show was the Divas, and I thought they were given every opportunity to have a great match because they came right after that musical break, and they came, I think they had the Hall of Famers out after the music, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they had that big lull, and then, bam, here we go, we're back to wrestling, it was the Divas, and I really, I'm sorry, that match did not do it for me, and people are going to be used to what I'm going to say next. It's the Bellas' fault, because the way that match was booked, the Bellas had 2-on-1 on Paige, they had the offense through 90% of that match, and nobody cared.
Well, it was only 6 minutes, too. I mean, it was kind of something. They've had more time on Monday Night Raws to compete, but considering it was just like a tag match, the Divas Championship wasn't on the line, they didn't screw up to the degree where I was just going to bury the match. I think it was all right for what it was. It was probably one of the worst two matches on the card, but again, they had a lot to kind of compete with.
But I had anticipation for this match. I even joked around, and maybe it wasn't a joke. It was the match I was most looking forward to heading into this based on the horrible build. I really was looking forward to the Divas match, and I just thought, I'll say it again, the whole thing about this, give Divas a chance, except for the Bellas, because the Bellas are not going to get it done. If they're going to be at the top of the Divas division, it's going to fail.
Well, they're easy to hate. That's why they're there.
Yeah, but they're hated for the wrong reasons. They have X-Pac heat, as was displayed on Monday Night Raw, which we'll get to a little later.
Yeah, X-Pac heat. Good analogy.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll get to what they were chanting at the Bellas at Raw and our thoughts on that a little later on. But we'll stick with WrestleMania as we go. The pre-show ended up being a little fatter than what we had said before we started, or had they changed that by the time we did the podcast last week?
No, that was confirmed when we did the podcast that the Battle Royal would be on the pre-show, yeah.
Okay, so the pre-show, I mean, nothing really to that tag team match. I'm glad Tyson and Cesaro still have the titles because that was the right thing to do. Did some cool spots in the match. Nobody likes the New Day, as was confirmed at WrestleMania and at more so at Raw. And, you know, one of the Usos is hurt, so the tag team division is really cut in half. So, you know, it's tough times for Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, I guess, because the only real capable workers, you know, only have half a team.
Well, it was hard to watch, too. Like, that tag team match at that time of the day, it was so bright outside, and with the ring kind of being a grayish white, it was just reflecting, and I had to wear sunglasses just to keep an eye on what was going on. But, again, we both picked Tyson Kidd and Cesaro to emerge victorious, but, I mean, we'll talk about Monday Night Raw later. It looks like we have another tag team in the fold now, so it'll be interesting to see if they get a title shot at the next pay-per-view.
I don't know. That would be awfully fast, but we'll get to that when we get to Raw. We're teasing Raw a heck of a lot, but WrestleMania was pretty darn good. The Battle Royal, I hated who won, but I thought everything else was great about it.
It made sense that Big Show won. He was going to win one of these eventually, and the fact that it was on the pre-show, you know, this was the perfect time to do it. If this was on WrestleMania's actual card, I think a lot more people would have pooped on it, but it's the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Big Show was the closest thing we've ever seen to Andre, and they were mentioning on commentary throughout the entire bout that Big Show has never won a Battle Royal before.
Which is not true, by the way.
What has he won, then?
He won some Battle Royal. I was listening to Law or something, and one of their callers had brought up a Battle Royal he had won. So that was actually Michael Cole lying to us. Like, Bray Wyatt knows that Michael Cole lies to us, and now we don't have to deal with Michael Cole. We'll get to that later, too.
This was a meaningful Battle Royal win, let's just put it that way. When he does the Royal Rumble, he's always usually like one of the last two guys eliminated because it's always such a cool spot to throw the 500-pounder over the top rope. And we all thought, I mean, a lot of people thought, I picked Ryback to win, but Mizdow being there, it wouldn't have made a lot of sense for him to eliminate Big Show. Mizdow got his rub by throwing Miz over the top rope, but Big Show, it's all good, man.
And Cesaro was in that match, and I thought they did a nice tease to last year's Andre the Giant Battle Royal, where he tried to do the body slam again on the Big Show. I like that.
Yeah, nice redemption for Big Show, kind of. What was it? It was Big Show who threw Cesaro over, right?
Yeah, I think Big Show eliminated Cesaro. My only complaint was that whole tension that they built up between Kane and the Big Show mysteriously and miraculously has disappeared.
Yeah, we're so disappointed about that.
Well, no, but I mean, like, that was the whole thing. Everyone thought that Kane and the Big Show were going to get into it and probably eliminate each other. There was no even tease of that. Kane, I forget who eliminated Kane, but I don't think him and Big Show even touched in that match.
I think it was, I think Ryback might have been the one to throw Kane over. But, yeah, again, they could still work with that moving forward. I don't really mind that they didn't showcase that during their Battle Royal.
Anyway, it was what it was, and I thought, for the pre-show, wasn't too bad. Oh, and by the way, they pulled a little trick on you with the pre-show. Those weren't free. You had to have the network for those. They only showed the first hour with no matches.
Yeah, well, I had the network, so thank God for that.
Sneaky WWE. Sneaky, sneaky. Anyway, we move on to the main show, and not surprisingly, they started off with the ladder match, which, resembles a battle royal at times, I guess. And even from the entrances, I thought this was booked pretty smart. I mean, you started, first person we see on WrestleMania is the last person we see on last year's WrestleMania. It's Daniel Bryan. The yeses are going crazy. And we ended with Dean Ambrose coming out last for this match. I thought perfect.
I was actually disappointed with the ladder match. I expected a hell of a lot more because when we were watching Monday Night Raws leading up to WrestleMania, this was one of the major storylines that they were pushing with a lot of the part-timers not on regularly. So I was expecting kind of, maybe like one of the better ladder matches we've ever seen, but it kind of came down to a spot fest. There was only two really big moments that you can take away from it when Barrett was bullhammering people, and then when I think it was Harper who powerbombed Ambrose over the top rope through the ladder. Those were the only two kind of like you go back and look spots of the match. And then, when Bryan and Ziggler are up there headbutting each other, Ziggler falls off, Bryan becomes Intercontinental Champion. The logical choice, of course.
Okay, but I was talking about the entrance of Chris Walder.
Yeah, well, what about the entrances? Only you would put too much emphasis on that. It's the entrances. Yeah, Bryan was the last guy at WrestleMania, then he's the first guy out. Great way to get the crowd going. I'm talking about the match. That's what the people want to hear about.
Wow, Chris Walder getting feisty. Anyway,
it's been a long day, buddy.
I'm kind of in agreement with you about the ladder match. I thought it was fairly unspectacular, other than Dean Ambrose. I was shocked we got to see Dean Ambrose wrestle on both Raw and SmackDown this week, because that bump he took at the end of his run in that ladder match from Luke Harper was nasty.
He's a hardcore dude, man. He can get up after that.
Yeah, I mean, he wrestled in CZW, easy for me to say.
Yeah.
So he's taken a lot worse, but boy, oh boy, that looked like a hard fall. And you know what? In defense of the match itself, you've got guys in there who've had histories of being hurt. And it looks like Ziggler's been hurt again, as he apparently got hurt on Raw. So you had a guy like Ziggler with a concussion history, you have Daniel Bryan with his neck, you've got, Wade Barrett, who is a walking injury waiting to happen. I thought, I didn't expect a lot from this match based on that, and if I did, I would have been worried for those three guys in particular, and it's never going to be WrestleMania 17, the Hardys, Edge and Christian, and the Dudleys again, and the sooner people figure that out, the better.
I just think when you look at the kind of the booking, of the pre-show and then the opening match at WrestleMania, you had, 16 guys in the tag team match. You had another 30 in the Battle Royal, and then you have 7 in the ladder match. I think it was just too many bodies in the ring back to back to back. I would have preferred it to be maybe the second or third match at WrestleMania instead.
Yeah, but I mean, it was the right way to do it because you wanted to get the Daniel Bryan fans off on a happy note, and hopefully they would behave themselves for the rest of the show. That was the hope. They didn't exactly do that, but that was the hope anyway.
Well, if Bryan was always going to win, you could still book the match elsewhere.
And I thought the backstage segment, a little bit corny, but great for Daniel Bryan, great for the Intercontinental title, having all the legends come up, congratulate him. I thought that was, you know, smart business by the WWE.
Another subtle way to make the IC title feel important.
Yeah, and I mean that's where we're heading with this. And I mean, Daniel Bryan, his comments leading into this match, I thought he's really wrapped his head around this whole idea of building the Intercontinental title, and he's happy about it. He talked about, from New Japan Pro Wrestling, who we talked about before the show started, Shinsuke Nakamura, and what he's done with their Intercontinental title. He's talked about trying to do the same for the WWE's Intercontinental title, and I think that's the right attitude to have about it.
Yeah, definitely, but it's going to be extremely difficult to make the IC title feel more important than the world title, which can be the case over in New Japan, but I think, again, like I said earlier, Bryan's the perfect guy to be IC champion right now. When you look at all of the other guys in that match, most of them have had IC title reigns before, so this is uncharted waters for Bryan. I really hope he does kind of, you know, continue to embrace being that mid-tier champion and hopefully being that one guy who can make it feel more important.
Yeah, and had a couple good matches this week with Dolph Ziggler and with Sheamus on Raw and SmackDown, respectively. So I think, you know, he's happy. I don't know if fans are necessarily happy, but the guy they like is happy. I think, ideally, yes, he'd like to be in the world title picture, but this is a nice consolation prize for Daniel Bryan.
The world title picture is full of challengers right now. Bryan doesn't need to be there, and he said several times in interviews that the pushes will come. He just wants to wrestle. And the mid-card titles right now, I mean, you look at the Zigglers, the Sheamuses, the Barretts, the Harpers. I mean, my goodness, he's going to have a lot of really good workers to go one-on-one with. So, I mean, I'm not complaining, and the fans are starting to buy into it as well. So we'll see what happens.
And, you know, the history of this title is the worker title. Randy Savage, Ricky Steamboat, you know, like guys like that who were the best workers in the company. Mr. Perfect. I mean, you throw out names like that, and that's a good way you get back to making the Intercontinental title what it once was. So, no complaints with who won. I would have liked to have seen Dean Ambrose, but, you know, I was fully accepting and kind of understood why it was Daniel Bryan.
We can't all be right like Chris Walder.
No, I'm just saying, like, I wanted Dean Ambrose to win.
I know.
But I understood.
I'm just rubbing it in, man. We make our picks for a reason, bragging rights.
I just make them because that's what we're supposed to do as a podcast. I really don't care if I'm right or wrong.
Well, I appreciate the competition.
Anyway, next on the card, surprisingly, I think, was we got Seth Rollins and Randy Orton early.
Why are we surprised by that?
Well, how the night turned out, it wasn't surprising.
Yeah.
But the fact that it came on second, I was kind of, oh, that's interesting. And it was, I thought, make it third and not make it as obvious. That was my thought, because especially with how that match ended and the result of it, I was like, oh boy, they've certainly set the table. And we'll get to that, what table they set later on. But this match in and of itself, you know what? I think it could have been the best match on this show. I really do. And that sounds a little crazy, but I thought it was a great match. And the finish, that was the best RKO I have ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big fan of the one he pulled on Evan Bourne when he was around, when he did the shooting star press and he caught him in midair. I think it's kind of 1A, 1B. But, man, that when Seth Rollins went for the curb stomp and Orton just kind of flung him in the air and gave him an RKO, definitely such a really sick spot. And I picked Seth Rollins to win just because I figured it was going to be like a very heel-centric card, a face-centric card where all the good guys were going to win. So I figured, hey, you toss a bone to one of the bad guys, and Rollins might be able to go over the Viper here. But again, considering the circumstances of how the show ended, it made total sense. The finish with Orton was awesome. And again, it was one of the better wrestling matches on the card.
Yeah, I argue it was the best match on the show. I really do. I think it can stand with any other match that was on this show, and I really liked it a lot. And the height he got on that RKO Rollins was just ridiculous.
Insane, yeah.
Anyway, up next, now this one was surprising. Would you agree? We had Sting and Triple H next.
Yeah, I was more surprised about the positioning of this one. I thought it was going to be the second last match.
Now, before we get into the match itself, we are talking entrances here, Chris Walder.
Okay.
Because I think these were very worthy of discussion on both cases.
Yes.
I love Triple H. I think Triple H is great. I love his over-the-top crazy entrances that he has every year. Some people don't like them. I do. This one, I absolutely hated. I understand why it was done, because the WWE made some money off of it. Still, it sucked.
Boo! What is wrong with you? How could you hate the Terminator, man?
It wasn't the Terminator that I hated. It was that stupid mask that Triple H had that was absolutely awful.
Do you hated that one more than the one he had last year?
I love the gold crown with the mask. I love that. That was great.
So what was exactly wrong with this one? Like, kind of the robot arms and then the Terminator-esque mask.
He couldn't get out of it, for starters, on his own. He needed help. The eye with the Terminator thing looked just totally out of place. And all those stupid robots, I just didn't dig it. I mean, I didn't dig it at all. And really, it seems like it was, the reaction to this online was really, we're both ends of the spectrum. And that's how it was online, too. Because some people loved it, other people hated it.
I was definitely on the positive end. There was actually a story that they had Schwarzenegger kind of do a couple of lines of speech during the entrance. WWE was in crazy panic mode because they didn't have that ready before the Hall of Fame ceremony. So he actually recorded that at the SAP Center in San Jose during the Hall of Fame. So just a little news bit for you guys out there.
There you go, a little behind the scenes from Chris Walder. And then we had Sting, who's hailing from Japan these days, apparently, because he had a whole Japanese quartet to summon him to the ring. I didn't like this at all.
Again, you're just, haters gonna hate, James. You're not into fun, you're not into entertainment.
Tell me what is Japanese about Sting.
Who cares?
And then he came out in a Michael Jackson outfit. Like Michael Jackson isn't Japanese either.
Just, I have no words for you, man.
What?
It was good, I liked it. I don't care if he's Japanese or not. It was, they were all wearing the face paint. It was going to the beat of the entrance music. I mean, whatever. It was cool.
I thought Triple H was taking on the Great Muda. I thought Sting had pulled out last minute.
The Muda, yeah. Well, you know what? I mean, just take it for what it's worth. It's an entrance. It's WrestleMania. They like to go over the top. I didn't have a problem with it. It was fun. Fun is fun.
As for this match, I'm sure we'll disagree in this as well. I liked everything. Or I hated everything except for the ending. The right guy won. They got that part right.
And Triple H doesn't like putting over the WCW boys, apparently.
No, Vince doesn't like putting over the WCW boys. Anyone who's out there listening to this podcast and thinks Triple H politicked his way to a win here, it didn't happen. This was a Vince McMahon call 100%. And plus what happens later in the show, Triple H needed to win this match too.
Oh, yeah, because that segment that they did later, yeah, Triple H wouldn't have made sense. But I'm curious now what they do with Sting. I mean, this might have been his only WrestleMania match. The inclusion, I don't know what you think about it, but I really like the DX coming out, the NWO coming out. Even though the NWO and Sting have always been kind of waging war with each other during WCW days, that kind of didn't make sense to me. And then the finish where, you know, Triple H winning, that's cool and all, but why would Sting shake his hand afterwards? He just got clocked in the face with the sledgehammer.
Who knows? And the NWO walking run-in was great. I mean, the way they walked in there. Hey, in all honesty, though, all of that was needed, because as much as people want to put over Sting and all that, they needed a match that was heavily overbooked like this, because I don't think Sting was in the greatest shape for this match, and I don't think Hunter actually was in the greatest shape for this match, because his leg got pretty banged up at some point in this match, or maybe it was going into it, but he didn't look all that great from what we've seen him in the past, so this match needed all that overbooking. And we'll get to Taker's match later and the whole idea of if we get Taker's thing. I think these two matches cemented why we don't ever want to see Taker's thing.
Well, I disagree. I always feel the nostalgia of Taker's thing will kind of win over, even if the match isn't very good. And about Triple H's injury, apparently he got that bruise from being tossed over the top rope. But a couple of years ago, when he was fighting Undertaker, I believe, he had a similar thing where he got, during his entrance, I think it was like ice was shot at him or whatnot.
Oh, he got burned. That was terrible.
Yeah. I had to look back at the entrance. I thought that might have been the case again this year, but no, he just got badly tossed over the top rope and he landed very hard. So Triple H, man, that guy, he persevered because he was able to fight with that big, banger on his leg. But to Sting's case and Undertaker's case, I would still love to see it. But again, you're right on the money. They needed all of these guys to come out because Sting and Triple H wouldn't have been able to carry a 20-minute match by themselves.
No, not at all. And that was made very clear. And Sting, by the end of it, looked very old. I mean, he really did.
Well, can you blame him? He's old.
No, I'm just saying, like the mystique of Sting by the end of that match was totally gone.
Well, this isn't the, the 35-year-old Sting or the 35-year-old Undertaker. I mean, we were watching this guy compete in TNA, and the problems were the same there. Like, he was having to wrestle 6 or 7 minute matches because he couldn't hang with it anymore. And I figured, he's wrestling Triple H, and Triple H is obviously going to put his all into this match. He only wrestles once a year now, so could he carry Sting? Apparently not.
Yeah, we got bumps from Hulk Hogan in this, Scott Hall. I think Kevin Nash may have tore his quad for the millionth time.
Yeah, we all made jokes about that on Twitter.
X-Pac,
yeah.
I mean, Shawn Michaels was out there, even though he's retired. He landed another super kick. I mean,
which barely connected, by the way.
To me, what's the difference for Shawn Michaels? I mean, he doesn't have a problem coming out and delivering super kicks every year. But he can't do a match. Why?
He's Mr. WrestleMania. Do you want him on there? He was a part of DX. I think people would have been upset if he wasn't a part of it.
I'm going to make a prediction. Shawn Michaels is doing a match at 32.
No way. No chance.
It's going to happen.
No.
It's going to happen.
Less than 0%.
They're
going to fight.
Hunter is going to talk him into it. It's going to happen.
Nope.
It's going to happen.
Okay. Well, we'll have this conversation a year from now, but sure.
Daniel
I'm
Bryan.
Right now, it's not.
HBK, book it.
Oh, God. Well, I'd love to have it, but it's not happening.
It's happening.
Let's get Austin Punk while we're at it.
Well, that's not happening.
Let's get Savage back from the dead. He can wrestle.
The hologram. Bit. Hey, Randy Savage's hologram would wrestle better than The Undertaker and Sting combined.
Savage's hologram versus Wyatt's hologram.
Yeah.
Let's
Battle
do it.
Of the holograms. Let's do it. I like it. What came next, Chris Walder? Because I'm all riled up now from this Sting Triple H stuff.
Well, I think we discussed the Divas match, so we'll put
that
to
the
side.
Yeah, we did. Oh, yeah, and then we had the entertainment or whatever the hell that was.
Well, let's go to the United States Championship match. John Cena, the new United States Champion, he gives Rusev his first pinfall defeat.
Okay, wait. You're burying the lead.
Well,
Rusev came out on a friggin' tank. On a tank! With armored, shotguns or whatever they were, artillery going off, Lana leading Russian soldiers carrying a flag, and then we had a propaganda film of basically Republicans, by the way, because Linda McMahon was a Republican, I don't know if you know, promoting the USA and John Cena. Before we even get into this match, there are the John Cena apologists out there, and they tell us how great John Cena is and how great he's been for the business and this, that, and the other thing. This match is the match you go to say that's total bullshit, because John Cena cannot friggin' get over as a babyface against a Russian heel. I saw more Russian flags in that crowd at an American sporting event than I have ever heard. This is the problem with John Cena. This match emphasized it. I'm done with the apologist. Go watch this match. You had people booing an American hero coming up out, after a Russian came out on a friggin' tank while Bulgarian, but who cares about that? Point is, my God, John Cena is never, ever going to be a babyface in this company, ever.
Which is not a big deal because he continues to get a reaction. Isn't that the whole point with John Cena? As long as fans are chanting something at him, he's going to be a top dog.
And but you see, that's the bullshit thing that the WWE has made you believe now. That's the John Cena philosophy now. Oh, well, if they react, then it's good. No, they're supposed to react a certain way. That's how wrestling is. It's supposed to be manipulating a crowd to do what you want them to do. John Cena has never been able to do that.
All right. Well, I was surprised that Cena got as negative a reaction as he had, just because, you know, it's U.S. versus Russia, like you said, and fans should be a little more supportive of the American guy going for the United States Championship. But my God, he was just crapped over the entire match, and I think it was because a lot of people expected him to win, and there seems to be more and more pro-Rusev fans these days, not because he's a Russian sympathizer, but the fact that he's just really damn good as a monster heel, and they kind of wanted to see that undefeated streak of his continue to go. But when you go up against John Cena at WrestleMania, I don't care if you're 165-0, John Cena's going to go over.
But the part that blew me away was the Russian flags. Like, to go to the level of, I'm going to a store to buy a Russian flag because I hate John Cena that much.
Well, did you ever assume that maybe they were just Russian fans?
No. No. I've never seen that many Russian flags at an American sporting event ever. And trust me, the numbers for the WWE Network in Russia are not that strong. And believe me, there's not a lot of Russians making their way to WrestleMania.
It's Soviet Russia. WWE Network watches you.
as for the match itself, wasn't as good as their Fastlane match.
Yes.
And I thought the ending was kind of corny.
I didn't like the match, actually. I said that on Twitter afterwards. I'm like, it wasn't that great. Like, am I the only one who feels this way? And everyone was like, yeah, Cena and Rusev, they really killed it. It was one of the better matches on the card. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. It wasn't even better than the one they had at the last pay-per-view.
Yeah, I thought the last pay-per-view match was better, and I didn't like the ending of this as much because we haven't really followed up on it either, because Rusev and Lana kind of, you know, bumped into each other. And if you want to, this one is me just being petty and taking shots at John Cena for the sake of taking shots at him. But your American babyface, by the way, moves out of the way, causes a woman to be injured, and capitalizes on that to win the United States title. What a hero.
Well, it was a good way to write Lana off of programming because she's still out there making that movie with Edge.
Yeah.
And she needs acting classes because when she was on the ground cringing, she was laughing when Rusev was kind of yelling at her for that whole spot. So, and that kind of pissed me off more than anything. I mean, you just got knocked off the apron. Your boy Rusev just lost the title and you're like giggling, like, and the camera's on you? Come on.
Well, maybe she's going to come back as like this Russian beast of a diva and take the Divas title from Nikki Bella. Well, and we can do this all again.
There are reports that Lana's going to get this insane push when she comes back. Hell, she might be the general manager of Raw one day.
I can't see that. Not in Vince McMahon's company. A Russian running Vince McMahon's Raw?
Never say never.
I don't know. When you hear stories, like JR told a story this weekend, and I don't think he's ever told it before. They actually had a hard time getting Randy Orton signed by the WWE. Reason being, Vince McMahon was upset that Randy Orton had gone AWOL from the Marines.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have to broadcast that to anybody. Like, how many people really knew that when they were signing him?
No. What I'm saying is Vince McMahon's so patriotic that the fact that Randy Orton went AWOL was something that held him back from wanting him in the company.
Well, put it under the table and forget that he ever did that.
Well, you know, I'm just saying, JR brought it up, I thought it was a cool story, and it speaks to Vince McMahon's a very patriotic guy. That's why we got this angle in the whole first place. I really believe Vince McMahon thought this would get John Cena over as a babyface, and it failed.
Nope, it didn't work.
Yeah, it failed. Like, miserably failed. John Cena as the United States champion, that's a different story. I think this is going to work.
The chance he got on Monday Night Raw were even cooler. I loved him.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to
acknowledge it. Yeah, we'll talk about it.
We'll get to Raw. I mean, the Cena family if we include Nikki Bella in that. Not a good night for them. But anyway, we move along.
To the next match, which is what? The Undertaker and Wyatt?
Yeah. Now, when you judge this match on the surface, it wasn't that good. When you know the information that was out earlier in the day, kudos to Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt turned his ankle before this match. You could see him limping at times during it. And I thought, when I heard the news that Bray Wyatt had injured his ankle, I thought this match was going to totally suck. But we got a better version of The Undertaker, not a great version of The Undertaker, but better than the last few years. And a really game but gimpy Bray Wyatt. And they pulled off an average match, which, when you consider the circumstances, good job.
Again, when you're working in an outdoor building, it kind of killed, because there was still some daylight out at that time, and we're used to Undertaker and Wyatt having these, you know, really dark and spooky entrances, and I think they both would have gotten off a lot better. You know, Wyatt came down to the ring with all these NXT guys dressed up as scarecrows, which I thought was pretty cool, but if it was darker outside, it would have been epic. Same with Undertaker's return, but I'm going to give them a little bit more credit. I thought it was an above-average match. You know, I didn't expect a classic because it's Wyatt, first of all, and he doesn't kind of have those bouts on Undertaker. You know, this is his first match in the year, and we didn't really know what he could perform. But I think the two had really good chemistry together. I think the highlight of that match was when Wyatt was doing his little crab walk thing, and the Undertaker sat up, and that was one of the more famous pictures from that event. And, you know, now these days, Wyatt and anybody else who fights The Undertaker is going to kick out of a tombstone piledriver. That seems to be the thing to do at WrestleMania these days. But, again, the new face of fear or whatever, maybe they wanted fans wanted the torch to be passed, so to speak. I think Undertaker had to be had to win this match. Losing two in a row wouldn't have made a lick of sense. So I'm cool with the result. I'm cool with the match itself.
So next year, Young Bucks versus Undertaker in his retirement match. Tombstone versus Tombstone. I'm game.
You wish, buddy.
That's not happening. What does happen for The Undertaker, though? If it's not Sting, what is it?
The only other guy that they haven't done yet is John Cena. Ooh. That would have to be his retirement match.
And boy, oh boy... John Cena enters that match as a huge heel.
You know, you want a bold prediction? By WrestleMania 32, WWE is going to go full steam ahead with a John Cena heel turn. If not before then, it's happening at WrestleMania 32.
I feel like we're just going out on limbs today, so we should definitely archive this podcast. We may both regret it.
Hashtag bold predictions on the moon. Seriously, I'm going for it. I think John Cena's going to be healed this year. This has to happen, WWE. God, Vince, get over it. You know, you can still make money with Cena as a bad guy. But you know the funny thing? If Cena ever does go bad, he's going to become a face because fans are totally going to dig it.
Yeah, it won't be a long heel turn. I agree.
Yeah.
Especially if he brings back kind of like the old Cena rapper kind of guy.
No, it's going to be kind of like a cocky son of a gun where it's all about the money or whatnot.
That would be
like
the rapper guy, though.
No, not necessarily. When Cena was doing the Thuganomics stuff, it was just kind of like a gangster Eminem kind of deal. I'm talking about...
Yeah, but now he's like the made gangster Eminem. He's like the guy now that doesn't rap, he does movies. He's like, yeah, it would work.
You could, wearing the bling?
Yeah, you could still like just fast forward that character. Like, take a guy like Jay-Z as an example, or Diddy, what they are now as opposed to what they were.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that works. But anyway, it's not happening. But, you know, if we're going to do it, that's how you do it. But yeah, I think you're right about the entrances with Taker and Wyatt. And I mean, again, not enough credit can be given to Bray Wyatt. Because he I noticed it right away because I heard the reports, so I was looking for it. But Bray Wyatt was not even close to right. The reports are he was in a cast. From, like, the moment he did this until they did this match. Like, an air cast. I mean, I don't think we're seeing Bray Wyatt for a while, by the way.
The dude is awesome. I was a Bray Wyatt mark before. I think this match kind of solidified him as, like, my favorite guy in WWE. I think everything about him, his character, the whole build to this WrestleMania match where he did it all by himself. Undertaker didn't appear once, and he made this match feel insanely important. And I can't, he deserves all the credit in the world. And you're right, I don't think he's going to wrestle for the next couple of weeks. We probably won't see him at Extreme Rules, and rightfully so. I'm amazed that he got through this match.
I'm going to tell you something, too. This is the type of match with the brass, with Vince McMahon especially. This is the type of match that will make Bray Wyatt for life. Because of the fact that he went through, going through all that pain, and wrestled a match on WrestleMania, yeah, that's going to get you over. I mean, the classic one is Hunter with the torn quad. This wasn't that, obviously, but, you know, on the biggest stage of them all, Bray Wyatt goes out there with what was, I think, at best, a badly, badly sprained ankle. And pulls off a decent performance out of that with a guy who, let's face it, couldn't have been a lot of help to him because of his advanced age and all the rest of it. I can't give Bray Wyatt enough credit.
He was one of the MVPs of WrestleMania, enough said.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. On we go to, now we're up to the main event, are we not?
Yes, we are.
So Brock Lesnar comes in as the conquering hero to fireworks and cheers, and oh my, you knew what was coming next after Brock came out.
Just 76,000 people just raining down, no pun intended, on Roman Reigns.
Oh, you know what we forgot?
What?
We forgot my favorite part of WrestleMania.
Oh, my goodness, we can't forget your girl now.
We did, so go be up even before Undertaker Bray Wyatt. We had Stephanie McMahon and Triple H out in the ring for some bizarre reason. They came out to announce the attendance, which was inflated and fake, of 76,000 and whatever it was.
Yeah.
Stephanie gave a very heartfelt, I was at the first WrestleMania to see her friend, Andre the Giant. We always got to get that in there. Sitting ringside, and, you know, now we're here today, and it's all thanks to me. And that's when everything changed, and out came The Rock. That was not really a surprise if you'd been paying attention to the internet. But how this segment ended would be a huge surprise. As The Rock came out, confronted Triple H, and Stephanie wanted to basically have a match with Hunter and renew their rivalry, to which Hunter said, you know what, in the past I've gotten your number more times than enough. I don't need it. Screw you, Rock. And then The Rock got into it with Stephanie. Stephanie slaps him in the face. Tells him to get out of her ring, that The Rock wouldn't hit a woman, which back in the Attitude Era, he most certainly would have hit a woman, but this is a PG era, so yes, The Rock, a movie star, cannot hit a woman. So he left the ring like a shrinking violet, and he would walk around to the side of the ring, and it became very clear to the audience where he was going and what was happening next, even before he got and stopped. At the place he did, they were chanting Ronda Rousey. And sure enough, the camera shifts over. There is Ronda Rousey and the stair between the two. And Ronda climbs over the barricade and into the ring they go. And my, oh my, it was just craziness. The Rock introduces Rousey, says that she doesn't have a problem with hitting women. Stephanie points out the fact that her and Ronda are actually friends and brings up the whole thing with SummerSlam and all of the rest of that, and says that, you know, she wouldn't hurt Steph wouldn't get hurt by her, and then, you know, asks Ronda to leave her ring. Ronda doesn't leave. Stephanie gets mad. Ronda grabs the microphone after Stephanie says, this isn't the Octagon, this is my ring, get out. And Ronda says, any ring I'm in, I own. And then the fun ensued as Triple H said he'd heard enough of this. And The Rock goes to punch Hunter. Triple H comes to charge at The Rock, instead meets Ronda Rousey in a judo toss. Stephanie ends up in this weak little arm bar that wasn't Ronda's arm bar, but Stephanie sold it like it was. I thought Stephanie was going to die, and this was fantastic.
There are three things in WWE that would make Mr. James Borbath go galactic. One of them being Kevin Owens ever becoming WWE champion.
True.
Two, the Young Bucks debuting in WWE.
True.
And three, Ronda Rousey being in a WWE ring. And at WrestleMania, I said right away on Twitter, Condo on the Moon, man, my boy is going just super, 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 super excited right now because Ronda Rousey is in there with The Rock and Stephanie McMahon. And I was shocked. I had no idea that this was happening. Because, you know, Ronda Rousey is a UFC competitor, and she's under contract with them. And I didn't think for a second that Dana White would allow this. But holy crap, she was there. UFC had, of course, reiterate afterwards that this was just a one-off deal. She's not going to be wrestling for the company anytime soon. Obviously, right away, people were like, oh, wow, this is going to lead to The Rock and Rousey versus Stephanie and Triple H at WrestleMania. Obviously, that's off the table unless White agrees that, you know, Rousey can be in The Rock's corner, and then they do Rock versus Triple H in Dallas, but I don't even think that's going to happen at this point. But still, one of the cooler moments, ESPN was picking this up, you know, it was all over social media. Ronda Rousey is the biggest female star in the world right now, whether you want to talk mixed martial arts or just professional sports in general. She is super popular, her stock is on the rise, and the fact that she was at WrestleMania was great for both sides, UFC and WWE.
And Furious 7 opens in theaters today.
Yes, a movie I want to see, by the way. It looks really good.
But let's backtrack a little bit, because a couple of things there I want to touch on. You failed to mention what Ronda tweeted, though, which was, this is only the beginning.
Yeah, but don't look too much into that. That's not her employer saying that.
Yeah, but who does the tail wag the dog, or does the dog wag the tail when it comes to Ronda and the UFC? First of all, let's clear up what happened with this one. This one had been planned for months. Dana was even watching it. So the UFC was fully on board with this one. That said, the UFC saying this was a one-off, I'm not convinced it is a one-off. But I'm not convinced you see Ronda wrestle either. I think ultimately what you get is you get Triple H with Stephanie in his corner and Ronda in the corner of The Rock. That's what I think ultimately we get.
Which would still be cool. Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and let's give credit where credit is due. Tom Lawler's done this with Red Dragon now. And by the way, based on Ronda... doing this at WrestleMania, Tom Lawler was in the corner of Red Dragon at ROH his last show. So, you know, but, and Shayna Baszler's done this too. I think as long as it's not a match, I don't know where the UFC can complain.
Yeah, as long as she's not getting physical, you know, I mean, it's fake wrestling, and the odds of her actually getting hurt are slim to none, but, you know, why would you want her to compete anyway? This is a girl who's beating ladies in 14 seconds. You know, you don't want to kill that kind of aura around her, right?
Yeah, like, Stephanie's going to last longer than Kat Zingano?
Yeah, exactly.
That's not a good look. But what was a good look, and what Dana White has to be thrilled with, that judo toss on Triple H, that was something else. I mean, she just friggin' flung him.
Yeah, well, shit. Well, he had to sell it, too, of course.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't think he had to do much selling on that, to be honest. I think Triple H just charged, and she did what she does to everybody else, and just flung him like a sack of potatoes. And, yeah, that made Ronda look... Because there's all the talk when Ronda's in UFC, inevitably, because she's basically wiped out her entire division. The talk now is, could she beat men? She
right.
took a guy who's a former WWE champion and tossed him on his ass like he was nothing. That adds to the aura of Ronda Rousey.
Still super cool. I loved it.
The other thing that I heard was interesting. I don't know if this is even close to true. There's rumors she might be dating The Rock.
Really?
Yeah, really. And then that would change the dynamic of this too, I think. Because if she's actually dating The Rock, maybe she's more apt to do this WrestleMania thing and say the hell with Dana.
Well, Dana, God, that would be the ultimate power couple in sports, The Rock and Ronda Rousey. Just think of the children.
Yeah, what?
Like kicking ass in preschool.
What I do know for sure, they do have the same agent. That is
right.
Fact. They have the same agent, and I think, you know, I just think if it's done the right way, like it was done at WrestleMania, all we need to see is Stephanie in that armbar.
Yeah.
That's all people want to see. They don't care how we get there. They don't need a match for that. Like, she can be out on the outside and, you know, simple as that. Or as we've talked about it, you can always have her as the referee between Triple H and, you know, The Rock. That's another way you could go with it, too.
You just want Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania. It doesn't matter how you get to.
She's going
to
be there anyway. Like, she's going as a fan. Like, if she's not, if she doesn't have a fight booked within the time period of WrestleMania, she's going to be there.
Yes.
And I think that's the only way the UFC could stop her is booking her in a fight that's somewhere near WrestleMania. That's about the only way they could stop her.
But by the way, just to sidetrack here, Mr. Shinsuke Nakamura just went on Twitter and replied to Daniel Bryan, and I have the tweet right here.
Well, you should explain, though, because we talked about this before the podcast started.
Oh, did we not
this was not on the podcast.
Oh, okay. So what I'm talking about is Daniel Bryan mentioned that, you know, now that he's the Intercontinental Champion, he would love to have a one-on-one match with Shinsuke Nakamura, who's actually the Intercontinental Champion over in New Japan, arguably one of the most popular wrestlers on the planet right now. If you haven't seen this stuff, YouTube him. It's worth it. So Nakamura just messaged Daniel Bryan on Twitter with the message, anytime, anywhere I say, hashtag yes, smiley face.
Nakamura using a smiley face is what puts that over.
Oh my God, please make this happen. Daniel Bryan versus Shinsuke Nakamura, Intercontinental Champion versus Intercontinental Champion. Oh, I love it.
Nakamura.
Please.
Nakamura needs to come to the WWE.
Oh, yes. I don't know if he needs to come to WWE. I don't want Vince McMahon to get his hands on him. He's perfect the way he is.
No, he literally needs to come. He really does. I think, if for nothing else, what a match for a Tommy that would be on the main roster.
Nakamura versus a Tommy?
Yeah. That would be a great match for him.
You're speaking my language right now.
That would be a great match for him. And, you know, Nakamura is just out of this world. But that's neither here nor there. Maybe that's WrestleMania 32. Who knows? Triple threat. Nakamura, Tommy, and Daniel Bryan. Because that was another match Daniel Bryan said he would love to have.
With a Tommy, right?
Yeah.
Because, well, they had some classics back in Ring of Honor.
Exactly, and that's why.
That's what we need. We need that.
He'd love to have that, as he put it, on the WWE stage. So, you know, we will see. But anyway, I can't believe we almost didn't mention Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, how can we bite? I mean, she's your, like, you're her number one fan.
I'm up there. I don't know if I'm her number one fan.
You would be a horsewoman if it was at all possible.
I like being a man, if that's all right with you, Chris Walder.
I know, I'm just playing.
The Young Bucks, I am fully down with, on the other hand. The Young Bucks, I am down for life. Adam Cole, by the way. We'll talk a little Ring of Honor a little bit in between Raw and WrestleMania. But Adam Cole is talking again.
Yeah, I noticed that he put that YouTube video out. What did he say exactly? I haven't watched it.
It's quite the promo. Go check it out. Adam Cole denying any participation in the KRD and is very upset at even the suggestion of it. And he's a very angry man. And he's apparently coming back soon, I guess.
Yeah, well, we're Adam Cole fans. We want to see him back.
All of Mount Rushmore. I want them all in WWE. I want them in WrestleMania 32. I want it to happen. It's not going to, but
I just don't want him
should.
To be one of those guys wearing the red mask in Ring of Honor. I hope that doesn't turn out to be true.
Who knows? Maybe
Could
he
be.
Is.
There's no way of knowing, right?
He says it isn't him, though.
Well, that's of course what he's going to say.
Well, yeah, that would be the right thing to say. But, you know, who knows? We will find out, I guess, in time. More on Ring of Honor in a little bit. But as far as WrestleMania, we were about to tell you about the main event, and Ronda Rousey and The Rock dang hijacked us out of that. We got through Brock's entrance. He came in like a star. Fireworks the whole nine yards. Paul Heyman beaming. Wouldn't let Lillian Garcia do her job. Good on Paul Heyman. He's much better than Lillian Garcia. But when Brock came out like a hero like that, you knew what was next. Actually, you knew at the Hall of Fame what was next. Because Roman got booed at the Hall of Fame.
And they kept showing him on the damn camera, which was annoying.
Well, I think it was just to kind of gauge the reaction he would have to that.
Yeah, wow. Like, that was ever going to improve.
Yeah, well, anyway. Roman still came through the crowd. Now, there's reports, and apparently we didn't see this, but there's reports some guy punched him in the face.
Who did?
When he was coming through the crowd. Apparently we didn't see it on camera, but apparently some dude punched him in the face.
Okay, well, that's not cool. Take Roman Reigns all you want. Don't start throwing punches at
him. That's heel heat, though. Like, no, why is he a babyface still? That's like old school heel heat. Like,
that guy
is stupid for punching him, by the way, because Lord knows what could have happened to him.
Oh my God. Well, for you don't want the camera showing Roman Reigns clocking a fan in the face. Then that's your heel turn.
Yeah, that'd be great. He could make the heel turn on his entrance to the ring. Never been done before.
That would be innovative.
Another thing about this match, the behind the scenes, so to speak, apparently Roman Reigns' family were legitimately pissed about the result of this match.
Yeah. Well, you heard the stories about the Rollins. Oh, well, I mean, we already know what's happening, but have you heard the stories?
No, I mean, I've heard bits and pieces, but people listening might not have heard any of it, so go ahead.
Well, of course, we're going to talk about Seth Rollins cashing in at the end of this match, of course, but apparently there are reports out there that the decision to have Seth Rollins cash in Money in the Bank was only determined at the end of the Undertaker-Bray Wyatt match. So this was literally a last-second decision. I don't know if it was kind of changed on the fly when they heard the reaction from the fans, how they were going to react to Roman Reigns. And I really do think leading into this show, Roman Reigns was supposed to win, but based on the crowd reaction, I think WWE said, screw it, there's absolutely no way we can end this show with him hoisting the belt. So they decided to have Rollins go out there. And if the family thought he was going to win, yeah, I'd be pissed too.
I think they knew Hall of Fame night.
No, I don't think so.
I do. Once they had that reaction on Hall of Fame night, the die had been cast. Now, would they tell Roman something different and tell his family, who one of was getting inducted in the Hall of Fame, something different? Yeah. Vince McMahon's lied to people before. I believe that. But I think Thursday cast the die if there was any doubt that we were going to have Roman Reigns as the champion. That ended Thursday night.
I said 0% chance Roman Reigns was going to win the title at WrestleMania. They would have been so stupid on WWE's part. They would have had another, you know, Royal Rumble moment where they have to kind of just fling off all of the criticism. Oh, this was like the worst WrestleMania ever. As good as WrestleMania was, if Roman Reigns was champion, people would have crapped all over it.
Oh, yeah. The ending clearly... Like, if the ending's different, I don't know what people think of this show. It's definitely not being talked about as the best show ever.
Yeah, if Rollins cashing in changed everything, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it was, I think a lot of people just kind of enjoyed the entertainment aspect. You know, like we talked about earlier, NWO coming out, DX coming out, Sting's first match, The Undertaker's return, Rollins and Orton delivered the ladder match. Sure, it was entertaining. It wasn't an all-time great WrestleMania, and I think always when you look at a card for WrestleMania, it's always going to be determined by what happens in the main event, and a lot was riding on Roman Reigns.
Okay,
and,
but let's get into this match, because we're kind of talking all around in circles of it.
Okay.
I really think, in all honesty, Roman Reigns earned my respect in this match. He might not have earned a lot of people's respect in this match, but I'm sorry. He did his job and did it well, and he knew he wasn't going to win. So, I mean, I think he did a great job in this match, and I think he really came through and really looked good against Brock Lesnar. And I mean, all the lucky breaks they had with cuts and making Lesnar look a bloody mess, I think only helped illustrate that. And I thought, you know, fans really gave Roman a hard ride on Raw the next night, and I don't think it was really deserving. I think he played his part in this three-way dance that we saw, and I think he played it really well.
Yeah, he looked vulnerable. You know, we've seen Brock Lesnar go up against guys and kind of decimate them from the very start. I mean, SummerSlam was a perfect example. It was basically a squash match with him and John Cena. So, and Roman Reigns, he took a beating and kept on ticking. I don't know how many German suplexes he took. He took a couple of F5s as well. But in terms of like his actual in-ring performance and what he executed, if you look at just from top to bottom, what he did, it was just Superman punches and spears. He literally did nothing else in that match besides get the crap kicked out of him and do his finishing moves. That's it.
No, he had those knees on the ropes, which I thought was great too.
I mean, his actual moves, like whether it's like a toss or an arm drag or just something wrestling related. He kneed him a couple of times. This is one half of the main event of WrestleMania. He literally did nothing.
No, those were vicious knees on the ropes. I'll agree to disagree with you there.
This match was 90% Brock Lesnar just carrying.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that was clearly a turning moment in the match in Roman's favor, and I thought he looked good in doing it.
Okay, well, agree to disagree.
Yeah, like I said. But anyway, that said, Brock was Brock. We had wondered who would call this match and what was going to happen. Brock clearly called this match. And he kept to a pretty simple script of suplex, repeat. And it was very much like the John Cena match, although I thought Roman came out looking much better than John Cena because he toughed it out. A lot of times Brock would lay on all this punishment and you'd get a smile or a is that all you got kind of look from Roman Reigns. I thought it was great. Then Seth comes out. The crowd goes absolutely bonkers, and we'll pause it right there. I think one of the things about this, aside from it being Seth, aside from how people feel about Roman and Brock, history right in that moment, never has happened. We're getting a cash-in at WrestleMania. That alone was the reason for this crowd to pop.
I didn't think WWE had the balls to do it. To be honest, I mean, Money in the Bank is such a big deal. You know, Rollins has been holding that for the better part of the year, and for them to do it at WrestleMania, I mean, I was sold from the very beginning. Like Roman Reigns is probably going to win this, even though I said Brock Lesnar he could use the longer title reign. He's the number one guy in the company right now, of course. But Seth Rollins coming in, cashing in Money in the Bank, and again, this was also the first time that they've ever cashed in during a match. Like, they turned this into a triple threat, which changed the landscape entirely. Rollins didn't need to pin Brock Lesnar. Rollins is now the champion, but Lesnar has still never been pinned or submitted since ending the streak. So the Conqueror is still out there. Roman Reigns looks a tad bit more vulnerable, you know, as like a sympathetic babyface, because he got screwed out of his title match. And Rollins, the best heel in the company, is now your number one champion. This is perfect.
And that was going to be my second point. We had never seen it cashed in that way before, leaving the crowd totally for a genuine reaction. Because everyone assumed that either Brock was going to get so beat up and he would still win somehow and Seth would come out and finish off the job and win the title, or vice versa, Roman was going to win and Seth would finish him off. It wasn't that. He came out during the friggin' match, which had never been done before, but there's never been a rule saying you couldn't do it either. Like, we haven't had someone try and do this and be rejected in WWE history, so they actually didn't insult us how they tend to do with changing history. They just created some, and I thought it was some great history that they created by doing it this way.
Cashed in at any time, any place, and they really kind of just put an emphasis on that. Rollins cashing in during the match never happened before, and I was genuinely shocked. I was sitting there with my girlfriend on the couch, and he had no idea. I mean, she's not like a diehard wrestling fan like I am, but I was just kind of marking out throughout the entire thing. Like, what is Rollins cashing in now? I thought when Lesnar got Reigns in the F5, that was going to be the finish of the match. I thought, man, Lesnar's actually going to win this thing. I can't believe it. But then Rollins' music hit, and obviously one of the most epic endings we've ever seen to a WrestleMania. I don't know if you've seen some of the vines, or the I think Uproxx did a post on it as well. When Rollins was pinning Reigns, if you turn up the volume loud enough, or you alternate, you know, editor or what have you, he said thank you to Roman when he was pinning him, and that was kind of a genuine moment between two guys who have obviously come up in the company together. And good on Rollins. That was the smartest thing WWE has done in a very long time.
Yeah, and I mean, when he went through all that controversy a few months back, people wondered if he would even get his WrestleMania push, let alone become the world champion. Wow, look at him now.
The first Shield guy to win a world title. There you go. It's Rollins.
First NXT champion to win a world title too, which is significant.
Unless you count, Bryan, of course.
No, he was never an NXT champion.
I thought you meant NXT.
Not ROH, NXT.
No, I thought you meant like a guy from NXT winning the WWE title. But yeah, the first NXT champion. Yeah, of course. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
It is history. And another ROH champion to win the WWE title too, by the way. ROH producing a lot of stars for WWE these days. Anyway, that was WrestleMania, as we said. Great show. I think the thing is, it was just solid from top to bottom. There was really, other than the entertainment part, which is always, it is what it is. Other than that, there wasn't a lot of drop-off in this show.
Yeah, again, it was all around just really enjoyable. But, I mean, like you alluded to earlier, there wasn't that classic WrestleMania match. Like, we're not going to be looking back at Lesnar versus Reigns as an all-time great, you know, Sting versus Triple H. It is what it is with all the run-ins. The best match on the card may have been the second match on the show.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was what it was, and we mentioned Ring of Honor a couple times. Let's get into a few news and notes from Ring of Honor this week. As I told you, Adam Cole is talking again. That's very exciting. Go check out his promo. It's fantastic. But what is also going on is leaking out some information for Global Wars, War of the Worlds. Two of the New Japan superstars that will be coming have been announced, no surprise in either one. Okada is coming back, and so is Tanahashi. We better hope the next name we hear is Nakamura, that's all I'm saying. But those two guys confirmed for both shows in Philadelphia, and both shows, more importantly for us, here in Toronto at Global Wars. So that will be exciting to see those two guys back here on North American soil. Should be great. The other thing Ring of Honor announced this week, they're going back to do Field of Honor 2 August the 22nd at MCU Park in Brooklyn, New York. That was the event they stole from TNA, and they have maintained it and are going to be doing it again. So those are some news and notes for you from Ring of Honor, and that's what's going on with them. As for their show, WrestleMania Weekend, all the reviews I heard were pretty positive. None of the titles changed hands. Everything's status quo with ROH. The only bad thing was their crowd kind of leaked out a little bit as the NXT show that went on at San Jose Arena. Some of the ROH fans cut out early from the ROH show to go to the NXT show, but hey, ROH still got their money, so yeah. It all works from that standpoint. And that NXT show in San Jose, my God, I mean, it was crazy. You had JR there, Wale was there, and people were going bonkers.
And finally, Hideo Itami nailed the GTS. How cool is that?
And no one gets to see it because it wasn't on TV. I was fully expecting to see him nail it in his 2 out of 3 falls match with Tyler Breeze on television this week after he let it pop at the house show in San Jose. But not only did he not, he lost the match too to Tyler Breeze. Tyler Breeze building back up in the NXT ranks.
Yeah, I mean, I like Tyler Breeze. He's he's not going to be coming up to the main roster anytime soon. I think, you know, you kind of have to elevate him with this, with the victory over Itami. Itami's had his number as of late, and I'm excited. That was the last match between the two. Unfortunately, I like seeing them compete against each other, but now these two have to go their separate ways. And I mean, Kevin Owens is the champion right now. I don't think Breeze is going to be challenging him, but you know, maybe you can get a Tyler Breeze versus Balor feud, or a Tyler Breeze versus Sami Zayn feud again, just kind of to hold down the fort as other things transpire.
I'll tell you one thing in general that I loved about NXT television this week. We had a real ROH feeling NXT show. And what I mean by that is Sami Zayn came back. He stated his intention that he wants Kevin Owens, wants to get his title back. Rhino was in a match. He's saying he wants to get the NXT world title. And it looks like Sami Zayn is going to have to go through Rhino to get to Kevin Owens, which is interesting. And then we even had a guy like Solomon Crow saying he wants to get the world title. A promotion where everyone wants to be world champion. What a novel concept the WWE has stumbled upon.
Well, it's the only belt there that's not the tag team titles, right? So if you're not going for the NXT championship, what are you going for?
Sasha Banks.
Sasha Banks, we're coming for you.
Yeah, maybe that's a way. That's the belt that Tyler Breeze should go for.
Tyler Breeze versus Sasha Banks at NXT TakeOver.
Yeah, maybe that. Intergendered, you know, WWE's never doing that. But NXT remains strong, and quite honestly, as we head into talking about Raw, NXT was really one of the major themes of that show the night after. NXT was hot. The two debuting acts they had from NXT were over like crazy. And even when NXT wasn't part of the mix, there were NXT chants throughout that crowd. NXT, this could be a huge year for them. And when you look at that show we mentioned in San Jose, that show grossed $200,000 at that San Jose State Arena. Like, that isn't chump change. If they start doing this touring, that's actually a profitable situation for the WWE.
Because you're going to get all these indie fans who may not be into the WWE product. NXT is kind of like diversified and become its own brand. Like, you sometimes you forget that this is WWE with all of the guys that are on that on the show. I mean, you got Tyler Breeze, Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Callahan. The list goes on and on and on. And you know, it's like the most all the money that's gone into, like, imagine if PWG was owned by WWE. That's essentially what NXT has become.
I can't imagine that, actually. That would be crazy.
I mean, use your imagination, James. We're creative here on the show. Use your imagination.
I can't imagine the WWE booking a match where someone would get slammed onto Legos. I can't do that.
Or gummy bears. Well, gummy bears.
Or have a woman kicked in the face with a thumbtack shoe by the Young Bucks. I can't imagine that happening in the WWE. That said, I get what you're trying to go with that. One other note about NXT, and I think not for this individual person is it a big deal, but I think it could lead to something that NXT has to worry about going down the line. CJ Parker asked for his release. Some people are saying he was fired. He was not fired. He asked to go, just like Justin Gabriel asked to go. We're seeing more and more of this with the WWE, with guys who are not in ideal spots. And what got me thinking about this was, what if some of these top NXT stars get sick of being stuck in purgatory? That's a problem for the WWE. I think they've mitigated it somewhat by merchandising, because Kevin Owens apparently is making a ton of money on merch right now. He's like second to... So, if they can make some money that way, I think it'll be okay, but it's something to consider with these guys kind of stuck in limbo, like a Sami Zayn who, like, we're going on 2 years he's been down there.
Yeah, well, there's a difference between a Sami Zayn and a CJ Parker. I think, you know, Sami Zayn obviously has more of a chance to make the main roster. When you're getting buried in developmental to the degree that CJ Parker was, who I think is an entertaining fella, you know,
Fella?
Yeah,
we haven't talked about Sheamus yet.
He's an entertaining fella. That's a little foreshadowing for you guys out there. But, you know, he's losing every week. He's kind of, like, become the running joke on television. So is he going to be on Raw or SmackDown anytime soon? Probably not. So I understand his logic of saying, hey, I'm going to leave NXT. I'm going to go try and wrestle elsewhere, make a name for myself. And who knows, maybe when I come back to NXT or WWE in general, I'll be worth more of your time. I'll be worth more money. And maybe I'll have more of a shot.
Why hasn't Zack Ryder come to this conclusion, by the way?
I don't know why.
He is on the main roster, but, you know, still.
If he wanted to leave and make money for himself, he should have done it years ago.
Yeah, like, literally, right after his big run ended, if he had a jump ship then, boy, he could have made a lot of money. But just my point of, they are different people, and I preface it by saying that, but that frustration, and these guys at the NXT level, that's why I brought up merchandise, not making a ton of money. Like, let's get that out of the way. They're on their base salary, it's not the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, well, that's what you kind of have to come to terms with when you wrestle in NXT. Some of the other guys that are coming up, you know, from the independent circuit probably have better deals because they already have established names. But, you know, the CJ Parkers of the world, they were making chump change down there.
You're not making Young Bucks money in NXT.
No, you're not.
And one other thing, and it happened on Raw, and we'll make the transition from here to there. AJ Lee, good on her for wearing the Bayley shirt on Raw. The most watched Raw of the year, giving that girl a little rub with wearing her t-shirt. AJ Lee doesn't have to do that. She did it. I think that's the spirit of CM Punk living on in the WWE, and I really liked it. I thought, good for her.
I had no idea she wore a Bayley shirt, so thanks for pointing that out to me.
Yeah, it said, I'm a hugger. That's Bayley's shirt.
Did not notice that.
Yeah, so there.
So I don't know how effective it was. If people, I don't even remember anyone mentioning that.
Well, yeah. Well, they didn't mention it on the show. It was like when
even on social media.
When CM Punk would do things like that, they wouldn't mention that he wore a Cesaro shirt to WrestleMania either. But it was there.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Anyway, welcome to the craziest night of the year. It is called Raw. It happens every year after WrestleMania, and we never know what the hell's going to happen on this show, and credit to the WWE. They came prepared this year for the crazies, I thought. They battled hard for 3 hours, and up until that last match, I thought they won the war pretty much.
Well, the last two matches, I don't think the Rusev Goldust match was anything to brag about, but yeah,
no, but the crowd didn't take it over either. They kind of...
Well, no, they muted the crowd, apparently.
Well, yeah, they did. They were playing with the audio a lot, but I don't think there was any negativity towards Rusev. The only thing they probably would have chanted with Rusev is, where's Lana?
Yeah.
Which has been the theme. But anyway, all in all, audio tricks and all that said, I thought they did a fairly good job dealing with the crazy people.
Yeah, I mean, because they actually delivered a decent product on Monday Night Raw for once. I mean, we had a lot to kind of just, you know, sit back and just take it all in. Brock Lesnar, they teased his first match, you know, the attack on the announcers, which was really cool, and then, of course, Stephanie McMahon coming out and suspending him. That kind of writes him off of television for a long time. F-5-ing
Michael Cole, though. That was
the ultimate face move.
That was the nod to the crowd. We understand who's here tonight. This is for you. Michael Cole gets F5'd, and Brock Lesnar is officially a babyface from that moment on. I don't know how you get away from being a babyface after that.
No, it's good, though, because that gave Stephanie a reason to suspend him, and we knew Lesnar wasn't going to be on TV every single week, so now we know why for the foreseeable future. So that was cool. Daniel Bryan versus Dolph Ziggler was amazing. So was Dean Ambrose versus John Cena. Two really, really good matches. And then we had a returning Sheamus. So, and then the NXT debuts. We had a couple of guys, Kalisto and Neville, who's lost his first name. I guess he left that at Full Sail. So
Okay, let's tackle some of this, because you mentioned a lot there.
One at a time, of course.
Dolph Ziggler apparently got hurt in that match with Daniel Bryan, so that's not good news for him.
Nope.
Because he was not on SmackDown. Hopefully it is not another concussion, because if it is, that is really bad news for Dolph Ziggler. So, but great match between the two. I thought, you know, it is what it is with those guys. They can go. One of the chants we heard of the night, Sheamus came out with a mohawk and little beads in his beard. The "you look stupid" chant. I loved it. It was appropriate because he did look stupid.
Yeah. It's a new Helier Sheamus, I guess. I love his new entrance music. Did you get a chance to catch that on SmackDown?
Not really. I was just kind of in awe of his stupid lookingness.
Well, he does have new music. He got rid of that the old Stacey one, I guess. It's kind of like the darker Celtic music that they were using in this promo, so I really dig that. But, yeah, he did look kind of weird. He kind of looks like an orc in one of those World of Warcraft games, but you don't want him to be cartoony. You had to get rid of the hair, and then the beard, obviously, no one digs that. So I'm cool with it. I like Sheamus as a competitor. I think he's an entertaining guy.
I just like that Sheamus has to walk around life with this haircut.
Simple as that. Well, he has his hat. I mean, he was wearing the hat, like, nonstop during all the press for WrestleMania.
Doesn't matter. I love it.
What's wrong with the mohawk? You never had, like, that mohawk phase during high school?
Not like that.
Getting all emo and stuff?
Not like that. Anyway, what else, you ran through so many things. I'm trying to remember them all now.
Okay, well, next...
Oh, the NXT guys. Let's talk about them. I've been very critical of Kalisto on this show many, many times. Boy, oh boy, though, were the Lucha Dragons over. And my God, the biggest pressure of this guy's career, and he didn't blow the spot for once. He actually nailed a really cool spot where he balanced on Cesaro's shoulders and did a flip right off his shoulders. Kalisto was on point. The crowd loved him. Neville, obviously, was great, too. We disagree a little bit. In the sense of, I think the cape thing, kind of dumb. I don't think that's going to last being over. I think it's a bad thing. But the match, solid. Neville doing what Neville does.
Well, Neville's not wearing the cape during his matches. That's what I was worried about. Him coming down to the ring with the hood and the cape, it's totally fine.
I don't know. It reminds me of the Hurricane.
Yeah, but he's not wearing it during the match, though, and he's not trying to be a superhero.
Neither did the Hurricane.
It's kind of like just kind of this mystical space, you know, like his entrance music, break orbit kind of stuff. Like, it's cool. People are looking way too much into it.
Well, when you were told he had a Mighty Mouse gimmick, I think now we understand what people were talking about when they were saying that.
Yeah, but they're not making him a superhero, though. It's just like, there was nothing during that match that made me think they're trying to go that way.
Go find me a normal person walking down the street with a cape.
It's an entrance for a wrestler. Like, why is this such a big deal to people? You know what? Maybe I'm just so happy for the guy. I mean, I'm a huge Neville fan. He was my favorite guy in NXT for like the last couple of years. So the fact that he's on the main roster right now is awesome. I just don't know what the hell they're gonna do with him at this point.
That's what I say. I like him too. I'm just looking out for him because I'm saying that cape, that entrance. I don't know.
He got a decent pop. Let's see what he gets this week.
Yeah, well, you know, once upon a time, Adam Rose had a pretty cool entrance, too. Different wrestlers, obviously.
Yeah, but Neville could wrestle.
Yeah, that's the thing. But still, that entrance I'm not blown away with. But clearly, NXT was over with this crowd, as I said. NXT chants all night long. It was craziness. They were in love with NXT. Funny thing was, though, the WWE, sneaky WWE, tease, we're going to see both Charlotte and Sasha Banks on this show. We saw neither.
Yeah, well, you can only have so many NXT debuts, you know. They would just get lost in the shuffle. Like, I thought, people were saying that when John Cena was doing his open challenge, that it might be like Finn Balor or maybe a debuting Samoa Joe. And I'm like, what are you, crazy? We just saw Kalisto. We just saw Neville. How many debuts do you want? Like, spread them out over the course of the next couple of months, but don't do them all at once.
And do them differently. I mean, let's have some vignettes for some of these guys.
Yeah.
Like, let's build it up. Like,
Neville got one vignette, and I was about half an hour before his debut.
Yeah, so, I mean, let's build them up a little bit. I understand why we didn't with these two acts, because I don't think vignettes would have helped either, because obviously neither are known for talking. So yeah, to just throw them out there, let them do what they do, wrestle, I think was smarter than WWE. But, yeah, so anyway, then we'll get into the crazy stuff of the night. The Divas were out there wrestling at some point, and Nikki and Brie Bella were in a match, and the crowd felt the need to address them.
Yeah, I don't know what the chants were. I know they were controversial. You'll have to go in depth on that.
Well, basically, it was to Nikki Bella, "You suck, Zena," and then Brie, insert Brian's name in there.
Oh, wow. Did they do one for AJ?
They did not.
Yeah.
They did not go there with AJ because, well,
she's popular.
And they respect her.
Yes.
They do not respect the Bellas. Some people are losing their friggin' minds over this, saying how disrespectful it was and blah, blah, blah. Well, wait a second. These girls are in the spots they're in kind of for that reason. I don't know if people are aware of that. It's not being sexist as much as it's being real. I would just say that to people. I don't want to get into a whole big thing about it. I don't think it was being sexist or rude as much as it was being real, and maybe too real. You can, if you want to make that argument, was a little too real? Yeah, maybe it was. But it wasn't being sexist. It was just pointing out, you two chicks don't belong where you are, and the reason you are is these two guys.
Well, all the power to those fans. I wouldn't have the guts to chant that stuff. It just seems kind of a little too far. And I'm a guy who likes to push the envelope myself, but at the same time, I wouldn't chant that to a woman. I don't care how true it is. I mean, we've all been critical of those two being in the spots because they're dating or married to the two biggest faces in the company. So I guess it was coming to them in a way, but no one really deserves to have that chanted at them.
Interesting choice of words there, Chris Walder.
What do you mean?
Never mind.
All right.
Go back and listen. You'll understand.
Okay.
Anyway, that said, and then, of course, John Cena, he got this at WrestleMania. It continued on Monday Night Raw. People love singing "John Cena Sucks."
John Cena sucks.
To his music. It has become, it's even better than when Kurt Angle had the Olympic music and they would chant, "You suck."
Yeah.
This is that on the next level.
So much better.
It is awesome.
I hope it sticks, too.
Oh, it's awesome. And, you know, typical John, though, he comes out there and he rubs it in the fans' faces that, oh, it's great and blah, 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 that people are making noise and all that junk.
Yeah, that won't last.
Anyway, big surprise, though. Dean Ambrose comes out to face him in a match. Absolutely right move on a show like this.
Yeah, I thought it might have been another debuting guy, but Dean Ambrose, I don't think anyone in that crowd was going to complain that Ambrose was going to fight for a title.
No, people love Dean in that crowd. That was the perfect guy to face him. I mean, Rusev, they were going on commentary about Rusev being the guy. That made no sense.
Yeah, they'll have their match at Extreme Rules. They didn't need to do it on Raw.
Yeah, and then two more things I want to get to. Obviously, Cole, Booker T and JBL all get taken out. They throw Byron Saxton out there on his own for about an hour. And call me cynical, I think this was done deliberately to make fans miss Michael Cole.
No. No chance.
I think that's why they did it. They wanted to say, you think Michael Cole sucks? We'll show you someone who sucks. And we'll throw someone out there in an untenable situation to make them look terrible. And I thought that's what they did to Byron Saxton.
Well, Cole's going to be back next week, so you can eliminate any plans for a new commentary team. Saxton was bad because he was just kind of thrown into the fire. Like, he's never, to have one commentator out there is ridiculous in the first place, and that's why Jerry the King Lawler, who does SmackDown now, Vince McMahon apparently sent him out there because Saxton was picking up the joint. And I feel like his commentary kind of ruined Neville's debut. I mean, for a guy who's so, you know, action-oriented and going off the top rope and whatnot, and for Saxton to be like, uh-oh, here comes Neville, red arrow. Like, come on, that was awful. But Cole's going to be back next week, so
which is
I don't think
terrible.
He's gonna care.
If that's true, that's ridiculous and stupid.
He had a cervical injury or something.
He got in trouble. They got in trouble for that too, because the way they made the injury sound, it sounded awfully similar to what that Mexican wrestler died from.
Yeah,
that I think is stupid. I think that's just people looking at the WWE for something to pick on them for. Yeah. I don't think they went out of their way to kind of mention, like, I just don't see them doing that. If it is, boo on them, but I just don't see that. But I do think it was designed for Byron Saxton to fail. It was designed for you to, oh, you think Michael Cole sucks? We'll give you something that's worse to make you realize he doesn't suck as bad.
Well, teach their own.
But if he's back next week, that's a total mistake.
No, he's back next week.
It's still, that's a mistake, is it not?
Well, I mean, as long as Saxton's not doing it.
No, I mean, who cares who's doing it? You had Brock Lesnar F5 him, and basically, they're saying basically he broke his neck. Like, he should not be coming out the next week to do commentary. I'm sorry. That's not a, oh, I got a boo-boo, I'm back this week. Yeah. No, he should have been gone for weeks on end. Even if it meant them swallowing their pride and getting JR to do it for a month, they should have done it.
Okay. Yeah, common sense, the injury should have kept him out, but they're not going that route, so.
Or even, you know, do something unique. Try something different. I know a lot of people were saying Stephanie had that interview with Renee Young, where Renee Young was trying to ask her about what went on with Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
And Stephanie mentioned about Renee being out there. And a lot of people took that to mean Renee was going to take over commentary. Why not try that? I mean, it's a 3-week experiment to me. That's what it would be for me. I mean, I think you've got 3 weeks to play around with, you know, what your announced team could be. If you don't want someone new doing your big show like Extreme Rules, I understand that. Have Cole come back then. But I would play around with it for 3 weeks on Raw.
That's a good suggestion. You know, I would have history, have Renee Young do it for a week. I never had a female lead announcer before, so, and I was hoping it was going to be her last week, but again, the original team's going to be back this Monday night, so
that and what has Tom Phillips done wrong? Because I think that guy's pretty outstanding, and yet we're not seeing much of him anymore.
Yeah, he's good. I don't know what he did. He did something, apparently.
Yeah, because they got that Rich Bream guy on NXT, who, he's terrible. Get rid of him. Fire him. Like, in all honesty, he's bad. You know, even you've got, you know, Kyle Edwards, a.k.a. Ardo Cal, who's in this company. I mean, there's lots of people you can go to and shuffle the deck and try some things. Uh-huh. I mean, there's no reason why you can't do that. But that's why I say, I think this was just totally designed to say, all you guys think you hate Cole? Well, fine, we'll take him out, we'll put someone out there, hang him out to dry, and see what you think of that.
Fair enough.
Anyway, that was Raw pretty much. Anything else that we missed on?
Nothing really. We covered all the important stuff.
And, you know, it was a heck of a week. I think, without question, the best 2 days the WWE has had back-to-back in a long, long time.
Well, we said that last year at WrestleMania 30. It's all about kind of continuing this momentum, and now they have a lot of it. You have Seth Rollins as your world champion, Cena as United States champion, Bryan as Intercontinental champion. There's a lot of things you could do right now with a lot of moving pieces, a lot of legitimate challengers, a lot of new and exciting feuds out there. And I think it's always difficult to kind of jump from WrestleMania to the post-Monday Night Raw, which are always going to be exciting. And then the weeks afterwards, it's like, what can you do to keep the interest in all these fans? And I think this Monday Night Raw is going to be just as important as last week's.
And what do you think of the decision? Because apparently it's locked in stone. Rollins' first title defense, Randy Orton. I think absolutely the right decision. I think with having Randy go over him at WrestleMania, it was a natural setup. It's a no-risk proposition putting these two guys in the ring together. I think you get a great match. The worst-case scenario, you're getting a great match.
Yeah, it had to be Orton, especially at WrestleMania. Orton pinned Rollins in the second match, and now Rollins is the champion. And I think right now you have to kind of play some emergency rehabilitation with Roman Reigns' character, because it's clear as day that people just do not care about Roman Reigns, and I think it worries me because I feel like at Extreme Rules they might do something with Big Show and Kane and Roman Reigns, which is kind of like their solution to everything when someone isn't getting over, put them against Big Show and Kane, two guys who couldn't draw a reaction to save their life. But we've already seen that in the last couple of months, and it hasn't worked. So do that with Roman Reigns, get him back where he needs to be, and go with the safe, sure bet, Rollins versus Orton. Make it Extreme Rules if you have to.
Yeah, it's kind of... Roman Reigns is in a no-win situation right now. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
The only thing that might save him is if Paul Heyman came out and managed him. That might save him.
They won't do that for a long time.
No, they're not going to do that right now because... that's the interesting thing. Where is Paul Heyman in all of this? Brock's obviously suspended. I guess we could get Paul Heyman, you know, advocating for his client for a couple weeks with Stephanie, but how do we keep Paul Heyman in the mix on this show, or do they even?
I don't know. Maybe they don't have him on TV for a while.
That will hurt this product tremendously, because let's face it, the only person who sold that world title match was Paul Heyman.
Definitely.
And he is a much needed person on television. Not every week. I don't think we need to see Paul every week, but we do need to see him more than we don't see him. And if we don't get to see Paul until Brock comes back sometime in July, I think that'll be a huge hole in this roster right now.
Yeah, and Wyatt's not available right now either. He's probably getting himself back to health with that ankle injury, and or maybe just to kind of just freshen up the character that now that the Undertaker feud is over, you know, what do you have to do with him? So two of your best talkers right now aren't going to be on TV. Roman Reigns is in shambles. You know, I guess that's more focus on Rollins right now to see if he can deliver the goods.
All I want is people to continue to start chanting either Ronda Rousey or Ronda's going to kill you at Stephanie. I want that to continue.
All right.
I feel that would be great.
Yes, it would be, yes.
It would, because Stephanie has become such an overbearing character, and I really feel like that's one where people can have something on her.
Yes.
You know, like that's a way to... Or, like, we've talked about so many times how Stephanie becomes this overbearing character to the point that she really hurts people. I would love to have, like, a baby face who she's berating pretend that Ronda Rousey's there and do, like, a fake entrance for Ronda Rousey.
Well,
and have Stephanie just, like, freak out. I think that would be great.
We'll see in the coming weeks if your plans come true.
I don't know. Lots to be excited about, though. And there wasn't a lot heading into this show. Let's be honest about that. But I think the WWE has at least they bought back some faith with their fan base, I think. And that given the position they were in, is about all they could hope for, I think, coming out of this WrestleMania.
It's a fun time to be a WWE fan, let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it's pretty fun times, unless your name is, of course, Roman Reigns.